You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org. There's an app for that. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin on this Tuesday afternoon, November the 12th. We're going to conclude our first hour here talking with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse. Slate Magazine, you probably saw the headline floating around social media, "The Dutch don't care about marriage. Americans can learn a lot from their indifference," says Katie Royfe of Slate Magazine. And a lot of people might say, you know what? Maybe it isn't that big of a deal. Maybe we could avoid all the confrontation and just take the laissez-faire response to the redefinition of marriage. What's the big deal? Is kind of the general response there. Joining us to respond, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Happy birthday, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Aren't you nice?
You share a birthday with my daughter.
Is that so?
Yes, yes.
Isn't that so? Is she older than 29?
No, she is actually a little bit young. She's 22 today, so.
The same age as my daughter.
I don't want to bring you down on your birthday, but how do you respond when you hear people say, and it's not just Katie Royfe in Slate Magazine, and it's not just the Dutch, but a lot of people in the United States, when they say, look, marriage just isn't that big of a deal?
Well, you know, the way I feel is that it's kind of sad. Because I think everybody wants to be loved. I think everyone wants reliable love. And when people are giving up on even the possibility of reliable love, and they're saying it's not that big of a deal, it's like they're washing their hands of a great value and a great good that I think in our heart of hearts everybody really wants.
What is your response to those who say, look, this is the easiest way to respond to the redefinition of marriage here in the United States, kind of the libertarian approach, which would be marriage is important to me. It's important to my wife or my husband. It's important to our kids, and we want it to be important to our grandkids too. But not everyone thinks this way. And of course, it looks like society is inevitably going this direction. Why rock the boat?
Well, the problem with that is that if we give up on it for ourselves, that means we're giving up on it for our children and grandchildren, even when our children and grandchildren don't get a vote. And I've talked to lots and lots of people whose parents have been divorced, whose grandparents have been divorced. I talked to one guy who, when he had been married for 13 years, he kind of looked around and he said, you know, nobody on either side of my family has ever been married this long before. I'm in uncharted waters, you know. So if my husband and I give up on lifelong love, we're not just doing that for ourselves. We're giving up on it for our kids and our grandchildren, too. And I don't think we really have the right to do that. I mean, I think we have to look further down the pike and say, you know, the reason societies have tried to create a social institution like marriage is because motherhood and fatherhood are forever. They're not a contract that you can give up at will or that you can buy your way out of. Motherhood and fatherhood are forever, and so therefore, your relationship to your child's other parent is really forever. And so you might as well figure out how to get along with one another and how to make that relationship as good and as loving as it can be. And that is what marriage has been all about, and I think that's what people really want marriage to be all about. We're kidding ourselves. We're blowing this off like it's nothing, and I just think people have given up because they can't figure it out. I don't think that if those Dutch people laying on the beach in that photo that they showed on Slate Magazine, if they thought it was possible, I think they'd do it.
I'd like you to react to something Katie Royfe wrote there in that Slate article. She says, this laissez-faire approach accommodates the vicissitudes of the heart. The changing nature of love, the great variety of forms attachments take in real life. What's your response to that characterization?
Well, I don't think it's very realistic in the following sense. In the first place, that attachment between mother and child and between father and child, a child's primary attachments to their parents is the most basic foundation of the child's life. So if you're going to say, well, that's about the vicissitudes of the heart, you're really blowing off something that's actually in real life, in reality, quite important for a person who has no vote at all, namely the child. So right away, that position isn't really realistic. And so what it's saying is that because my feelings are fickle, what we should do is have the society accommodate me and my fickle feelings rather than have society accommodate the need that people have for reliable love, the need starting with children, but not limited to children, the need that men and women have to be able to rely on one another and to know that even if you do have a bad day or even if your heart does change or, you know, something comes onto the horizon that's unforeseen, that you will still be there for the other person and that the other person will still be there for you. That, it seems to me, is more grounded in reality than saying, oh, gee, let's build social structures around giving everybody the easiest possible exit option. You know, because when you exit a relationship, don't forget, Katie, and all you other people who think this way, don't forget that when you exit a relationship, you take with you at least half the problems that were in that relationship. You take the half that you contributed, you know, in most cases. So a lot of the problems are going to follow you. You might as well settle down someplace and face up to your part of the equation and try to build a love that lasts.
She writes about the, quote, centuries-long American fixation on traditional family structures. What do you make of that characterization?
It's like this is unique to America. This is crazy. I mean, you know, I'm thinking to myself, okay, so the Europeans are farther down the road than we are. They're ahead of us like maybe 30 years or something in terms of the dissolution of the permanence of the family. Does that mean that there haven't been hundreds of years of stability of marriage and family in European life and in life in other countries and life in other parts of the world? I thought that was amazingly myopic in that particular case. I was quite surprised to see her say that. But you know that if you only look, you know, within your own lifetime, you might think that was true. But there's nothing unique about that. In a world historical sense, America, there's nothing unique about American attitudes toward marriage.
Is the same true when she describes it as the rigid, old-fashioned ideal of marriage?
Well, see, look what she's done, Todd. Look what she's done. She's taken marriage, which is an objective legal and social reality, and then she's pasted in front of it a bunch of negative adjectives to describe it, right? And so by doing that, she's tilting the deck towards her position, which is that marriage is not important, marriage is oppressive, marriage is a problem, no self-respecting woman should have anything to do with marriage, unless, of course, she's a lesbian, in which case marriage is absolutely central to her well-being. I mean, come on.
That's what I wondered about, because she wants to talk about all the varieties in which these relationships can manifest themselves. And I wanted to ask at the end of reading this article, then why the big fuss about same-sex marriage? Why the big fuss about opening the institution of marriage to same-sex couples?
Well, I think, we've talked about this before in other contexts, that redefining marriage redefines many other aspects of the social structure. And if you look at places where marriage has been redefined and as same-sex couples are allowed to call themselves married and allowed to participate in all the legal aspects that society regards as marriage, you don't see a huge uptake. You know, you don't see huge numbers of same-sex couples taking advantage of the new law. But what you do see are a lot of other changes that force marriage to be something new, that force Christians and other people who don't agree with a new view of marriage to conform to it. You know, so adoption agencies get closed right away, and bakers get sued right away, and different things like that take place right away, even when there aren't very many gay couples actually getting married. So you surmise from that those lawsuits were really the point of the exercise, that that changing of the social structure, that that hampering of faith-based social institutions, that that's really what it was all about, because that's the thing that you see happening. So if you just look around and draw conclusions from how people behave and how things change, you have to say, well, that's what the big fuss must be about. It must not be that all these ladies want to get married in white dresses together. That that must not be the biggest thing. The biggest thing must be shutting down the Christian Adoption Agency. So that, that's just drawing an inference from the way you see people behaving.
With only 20 seconds here, she wants to argue that essentially marriage is an unrealistic ideal. What's your basic response with 20 seconds?
Well, you know, Jesus upset the whole marriage apple cart way back in Matthew 19 when he said one to a customer for life and when he prohibited remarriage after divorce. And what he was trying to do was to make the conjugal bond, the marriage bond, just as permanent and just as deep as the blood bonds between parents and child, and just as deep and as permanent as God's love for each of us. That's what he was trying to do. And what Jesus was trying to do and still means to do, still wants to do, was as radical then as it is today. It continues to be radical, and yet it is still absolutely beautiful and an ideal, and I certainly intend to continue striving for it, no matter what Katie Rofe says.
Dr. Jennifer Oback-Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute, based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she is author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. You can find out more about the Ruth Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Jennifer, again, happy birthday, and thanks for being our guest.
Thanks, Todd.
When we come back, it's hour two of Issues, Etc. We're going to spend some time with Dr. James Buscher remembering on, let's see, we're going to remember Emperor Justinian on the 14th of November. Get a little jump on that. We'll be talking about the 6th century Emperor Justinian, who not only experiences a little bit of a revival of political fortune during his time as the empire is on decline, but also oversees a very significant council of the church. When we come back, hour two of Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues, Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the Divine Service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.
Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues, Etc. by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues, Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.